This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by our friends over at Liber. If you want to find out more about Liber's products or brilliant innovations, please click the link at the bottom. Kimmy Bennison, thanks for coming on the show today.
My pleasure, Katie. Absolute privilege to come on. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I was really excited to get you on, actually. And I know we spoke about it briefly, but you're just one of those people that is just really, really interesting to talk to in any scenario. And I know we've met a few times in person, and you're massive as well. You're an absolute giant. But aside from that, you're just a really interesting guy. So I'm really excited to see what comes out of today's show.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you see it that way. I'm not sure everybody would agree. I think, there's definitely some people at times where the eyes glaze over, Katie, you know, and it's like, okay, it's time to cut away from that. I like to think it's, at times I've got a good reading of when it's time to walk away and leave people alone. But, with regards to the height, as I like to say, I'm just average height. Everybody else is below average.
I love it. Kevin, now I'm gonna roll way back. So I've been stalking you a little bit, which you might have noticed, and I've noticed you've had 24 years in industry so far.
Yes. It's changed and it's evolved, but yes, it's 23 and a half years. This is my 24th year, yeah. So it's been some time now, you know, and sometimes I still feel like the new kid on the block. But then there's other things that give me realizations that, I'm a bit of an old fogey to some people as well. So, yeah, no, been around the industry a while.
But you didn't start out in industry, did you? So I'm going to roll way back now to when you were at kind of school time. And I'm going to dig a little bit into what you did there and what you wanted to do there. And I know you went into the army, but was that what you always wanted to do? Or how did that happen?
Great question. So, yeah, I already kind of warned you we could possibly go deep on this. So when I was at school, I didn't do particularly well at school, Katie. I think like many people in our industry, you know, for various reasons. For me, it was the struggle in applying focus and things like that. I used to lose my focus and then get easily distracted and then start playing up. So I was one of those kids that most of the teachers were absolutely sick fed up of me and were like glad when I left their classroom after the hour period or whatever. But I had a couple of teachers that did actually show faith, and I'll always remember those teachers. You know, it's when there's just a few people you can look in your timeline and you think that person really actually saw who I was, you know. So I had a teacher in particular, not many other people liked her, but she actually said to me, "Kevin, it's so frustrating. If you like just stuck in and done really well, you could stay on, you could do higher physics," which in Scotland, higher is A-level, right?
Right.
But I had another teacher saying, "No, Kevin, you're not staying on because you cause too much bother and you're rarely in school," you know, because I was playing truant. I was bunking off a lot. So when it came to leaving school, I did think about joining the army then, but actually I had a couple of people saying to me, "It's maybe better to get a trade behind you." So I applied for a couple of jobs then, one as a painter and decorator, one as a joiner. I think maybe a couple of others, but I think I got offered both of them, but I decided to take the joinery job. And a few months into it, I realized that I was pretty crap, to be fair. I was all right at doing some of the, you know, there's some stuff that I can still comfortably turn my hand to now with woodwork. But when I was in college and there was some people who were like really into doing the dovetail joints and all the rest of it and like proper, you know, examining it and loving it. And I was launching timber across the workshop because I was getting stressed because I couldn't do these flipping joints. And I was ending up packing up with glue and sawdust to make it look half decent. So, and then not surprisingly, the guy who was working for, when I got halfway through my apprenticeship, I was approaching the 2 year point. This is back in 1995. I was approaching the 2 year point and the guy who was working for, he went bust and he had to get rid of us. Probably partly to do with my bad workmanship and customers
Coming back.
complaining. So I'm forever sorry for that, Alex Stewart. But so then I had to decide, was I going to get another job as a joiner or was I going to do something else? And I decided then, okay, I'm going to join the army. I've had a crack at something else. I've had a crack at a trade. And I was urged by, I'd done pretty well in the entrance test. So I was urged by a couple of people in the family, right, rather than just jumping in and going perhaps in the likes of the Black Watch, which was our local infantry unit at the time, how about going in the REMI or the Royal Engineers or something? So then, yeah, I hung it out for a few months and then got in the Royal Engineers and ended up, you know, I got onto earth moving plant. That's what I decided to do in the army. I became a paratrooper in there as well. So I'd done P Company, which some people may be familiar with. And this is, by the way, you know, here we go. Like I said to you before we started, one question and then, you
No,
know, that
it's
fell
no,
up
keep going. No,
20
it's
minutes.
interesting. I think it's important, Kevin, to build that picture of, you know, how people end up where they end up. And I love people's life stories. So no, please carry on.
Yeah, so I remember being in basic training and they were so in the just to paint the picture in case you're not aware, within the Royal Engineers, right? And I think it the airborne side has expanded even more now in the engineers, but outside of parachute regiment, the engineers, Royal Engineers were the only regiment to have a 100% parachute trained unit outside of the parachute regiment. I'm pretty sure I'm correct in saying that. That's certainly what we kind of understood it to be anyway. And it was a very, very good squadron to be in. But I remember being in basic training and the parachute engineers came around and showed a video of doing P Company, jumping out of airplanes. And I honestly just thought that, you know, I just thought there's no way I'm running around with logs on my shoulder and hanging from logs hanging from a bit of rope and doing steeplechase and these high bar flipping confidence courses. I just thought, nah, I'm doing enough in basic training now, so I ain't even thinking about that. Well, as time went on, I suppose it just started becoming, I don't know, a little bit more ambitious or a little
Yeah.
bit daft, more daft or whatever. But yeah, eventually decided to go and have a crack at P Company. Worked on my fitness and then actually it's one of the best things I've ever done in my life, you know. I remember days on P Company and like basically walking along, not walking, you know, we call it tabbing, tactical advance to battle, which is a speed march type thing. And I remember going along after miles and miles and being up and down hills with a heavy backpack on, and my weapon was my S8 was virtually just hanging from the end of my arms. And I'm thinking, nobody understands what this is like, you know, even when you phone up your mum when you're a youngster and say, oh, yeah, we've done this today. And like, yeah, that's so good. And I thought, like, nobody that's not doing this knows what this is like, you
Yeah.
know. And yeah, so eventually I'd done well. I passed first time when I went on there. And then I had the realization that, I used to think that I wasn't good with heights, that I
Right,
was
okay.
afraid of heights. And then the next thing, because I'd passed the physical bit, I'm getting sent to Brize Norton to go on the jumps course, Brize Norton in Oxfordshire, to go on the jumps course. And I'm looking at every plane, and I'm going, oh, what height's it going to be when I'm jumping out, you know? And then, but to be honest, Katie, when it comes to, you know, when you're going to be jumping out of a plane for the first time and you've actually gone through doing P Company and you've passed that, you're like, I'm not going through all that physical hell and
Yeah.
not jumping out of the plane now, you know? So, and once you qualified at the time, we got an extra £3.65 a day for doing
Oh.
it. So who would not jump out of an airplane
Yeah.
for an extra
Oh,
£3.65 a
yes.
day?
It's at
Yeah,
least a
so
Happy Meal.
well, I saw it as that was an extra 2 nights out on the bevvy a month, you
There we
know.
go.
Yeah, when you're getting 365 a day, so yeah, and passing P Company, I suppose the thing about becoming an airborne soldier, about becoming a paratrooper, is it instills this mindset, this kind of never die mindset, which is all right when your body can stand up to that. But I've learned as I've got older that the body says, yeah, you might have to accept that you're going to die at some point and just take it a little bit steadier, you know. So, but that really I would say, you know, if there's any kind of boy to man thing,
Yeah.
that was it for me for sure. Yeah.
That straightened you out.
It did. Yeah, it did. It was like, well, actually, yeah, I've got maybe got something about me. Yeah.
I
Yeah.
mean, you've got bigger balls than me, Kevin, because the sound of it doesn't. I mean, I know I've been up tower cranes and stuff, but jumping out of a plane, I think's a whole nother level, even for an extra £3.60 odd, day. I don't think I could quite do it.
I thought that was one of the best bribes that anybody could possibly get, you know? Well, yeah, sign me up. Yeah.
I mean, but then Kevin, what's interesting about you is you did a number of years in the army, and then you had a change, and you went into, I mean, I know you've worked for some of the big crane companies, Huden, Emerson's, King Lifting, Amesco, to name drop a few. So you've gone from doing all that and loving life and throwing yourself out of planes, and then you've gone into crane operating.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like your tonality is suggestive, but you know, this is an equally exciting world, isn't it? The crane world, Katie, you know? Yeah, so when I left the army, the main reason I left the army, to be fair, was to start a family. I could see
Okay.
I'd got married when I was in the army, and it was evident to me. I mean, lots of people can make it work, but I just wasn't going to make it work. You know, I just wasn't very good at really understanding when to give my time and focus to my marriage and when to give my time and focus to the army. I was not very good at balancing that. So I just seemed to upset one or the other. And I knew it wasn't going to work. So for me, and it was not like I was certainly not given any ultimatum, but I just knew it wouldn't work. And I just thought, I have to choose one or the other. So I choose to kind of leave the army and then have a go with starting a family. So that's what I've done. I left the army mid 2000, and my oldest son was born in February 2001. So yeah, and when I left the army, I'd gone because I'd been on Earth Moving Plant in the army. I went and worked for a firm called Gamble Plant back in, and this was in Hemel Hempstead, just north of London, and I worked for them for a few months. But to be honest, just didn't enjoy it. You know, we had some right camaraderie on the plant equipment in the army and muck about. And if you get yourself in the crap, you'd laugh about it. Maybe you have to get a crate of beer in for the next do at the bar. When I then done it as a civvy, I was going to sites, and people were not happy with my approach to it. You know, I don't think, I don't know. It was just that it was all too serious. So I knew somebody who worked on the cranes, and they managed to get me a start at Huden Crane Hire. He'd already said when I left, oh, I could get you a job at Huden if you want, when I was leaving. I said, no, I'll stick with the earth moving plant for a while. I'll stick, because it was JCBs really, mainly the 3CXs. So I says, I'll stick with them for a while, see how it goes. And yeah, then I rang him back up and says, is that option still there? And he said, yeah, we can kind of get that sorted for you. So it was a good lady called Anne Histed, who was depot manager at West London depot of Huden at the time, and she took me on and gave me the start, and the rest is history.
Do you know what's quite interesting there, Kevin? Now, you left the army because of that work-life balance. And I know that cranes aren't particularly good at this either, this work-life balance at the best of the times. And especially if you're working in, West London, everywhere, Oxford, things like that. And a lot of people, not throwing mud at it, it's not as well known. A lot of people's relationships don't work because of the hours and the things they do. And so how did you make that work? Because I know you got stuck in at cranes as a crane operator, but then you went on to do your supervisor, your AP. So it was obviously something that you had a real passion for.
I did. I mean, it appealed to me more when I really thought about getting on the cranes, and I looked at them and I started seeing a couple on site. I thought, I don't know, on the outside of it, it's a bit more simplistic. You know, we know the cliche of you're just picking something up and putting it down again. But I don't know, just the physics of it, and the heavy machinery element. The cranes were bigger, you know, bigger toys to play with, and that appealed. And I didn't know anything about the working hours situation. But I wasn't earning the money that I needed to on the plant.
Okay.
And I'd been told, oh, there's loads of work, and you know, I was just doing standard Monday to Friday, which, yeah, maybe if I spoke to my younger self now, I'd say, well, you know, there's a lot to be said for doing that, because then, like the crane situation was, I ended up in that kind of situation where I was working too many hours. So
Yeah.
in reality, as much as I, you know, my marriage lasted for many years, I think that actually my dedication, my passion for working in lifting operations, and again, my struggle maybe to really recognize where to kind of draw the boundaries, you know, certainly as a younger man, that did lead to problems in the relationship for sure. And it certainly led to me missing a lot of spending time with my sons, you know. And you know what it's like, Katie, with the crane game, as you say. You know, there'd be times where I'd be working ridiculous hours during the week, and of course I end up on the bigger machines as well. So the main thing was, at the beginning, I was home pretty much every night,
Yes.
you know, which of course I was spending weeks away when I was in the army. But it was like I was just exhausted, you know. There was a weekend, certainly I remember when my boys were grown up, and I would have, say, often it would just be the one day off at the weekend, and I'd be exhausted. I wouldn't have the energy or the want to really spend time with them. So I used to have 2 days off at the weekend, and one day would sort of be recovery, and one day then I'd be nice and energetic and be able to spend time with my sons. But of course, having 2 days off every week didn't pay the bills either, you know, because you kind of get yourself in that way of life that you're kind of spending and using what you earn. So yeah, I'd
It's a real
certainly.
tough situation. It's and you know what you touched on it there, and you and I see it a lot, and there's certainly even today, I don't think things have really changed that much. I mean, we're going back, 24 years and talking about your start in construction and working on cranes. And I don't think things have changed that much. And don't get me wrong, I know there's some people out there that want all the hours that God's can send. They want the money. They don't really care about the rest of it, go to hell. It's about the money, it's about earning the wage, it's about getting things done. But I think just from a future perspective and that kind of flexibility, and I know when I talk about flexibility, people roll their eyes and they go, "Oh, here she goes again, talking about the unachievable." I know it's not for everyone, but there are some people out there that have other things going on, children, commitments, people they have to look after, that don't necessarily want to leave crane operating, crane supervising, APing, but they need a little bit of flexibility. And they're willing to take that little hit on the money because maybe they can, maybe they have to. But instead of doing that, more than often we've forced these people to leave and look for other occupations. And it's something that I talk about quite a lot. And I know I'm kind of digressing from where we were going with this, but what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a really deep and complex thing, Katie, you know, and there's a number of things, you know, that come straight up. Now, I speak about this pretty openly when I'm delivering training, and I like to think the training that I give, it's not your kind of standard run-of-the-mill. You know, I talk about a lot of stuff in terms of managing your own choices in life, using your time as you want to, as well as things about communicating more effectively with people, and maybe becoming a better, certainly dealing with APs and lifting managers, you know, managing people a little bit more effectively and stuff like that. So there's a lot of this sort of stuff that I kind of really think about and talk about. And these things that I think about and talk about have not come from just observations or reading about it. It's come from real experiences, you know. So I was close to bankruptcy a few years ago and really questioning my choices and what I was doing. I thought I was done with the industry, and I felt really deflated by it. This was kind of when I was going through the whole divorce process, and you know, I had my own business at the time, but I'd lost focus and that was going by the wayside. I'd embarked on a bit of a business partnership, and I was kind of really down on myself because I wasn't able to apply the focus that needed. So that kind of failed. And there's a couple of big messages in there that I think that many people there's things that many people are actually afraid of, and that keeps them doing things that they don't necessarily want to do, and that could be some people are afraid of not having any money. I've been there. As long as you kind of have your heart, your brain, your lungs, and your smile, you'll still be here, And then many people are afraid of being criticized or told they're wrong or being on the outside. They're afraid of not fitting in. I personally feel that there's a lot of fulfillment that comes from making your own choices. And even at times when that means when you make big mistakes, you don't know you're going to make that big mistake. But if you don't take the actions that have the potential for big mistakes, things can be a little bit flatline, I believe, in life, And one of the big things, we are talking about the hours and working away in the industry, and I do try to encourage people, like you might be sick fed up of working all these hours. Some people love it, and some people want to do that all their days, and that's their prerogative. But some people do it because they feel that they have to, and they will sell them stories that there isn't an option. But there is. It doesn't mean it's easy. It's not easy to break free. As I say to people, like if you go down the overtime route, and you become heavily reliant on the overtime, which many of us do in the industry, it is a tough road back. You can get back, but it's a tough road back, and you need to make some sacrifices. But long term, the short term pain, I do believe, leads to long term gain, And going back, like when I was at the point where I was close to bankruptcy, I thought, stuff this, I'm not going and working my ass off and all the hours just to kind of pay money to people that want money out of me, And this kind of conforming thing of, oh, all the societal ideals of you're meant to have this and you're meant to have that. And I thought, nah, I'll do it on my terms. And I thought, I want to improve my work-life balance. And I often say to people now, I'm not financially wealthy, but I'm fairly time wealthy. I can, like, a lot of the time choose how I'm going to spend my time because I don't take on too much work now, And I know that if I take on too much work, I'll become unhappy because I'm not able to do the things with my life that I want to do, So I often say to people on courses, if you're not choosing how to spend your time, other people will be choosing how they spend your time. If you're not making decisions based on achieving your goals, other people will be making decisions for you to help them achieve their goals. And that can be a bitter pill to swallow. But once you get that and you go, I'm going to make things different, it won't happen overnight. But actually, when you get a few years down the line and you go, wow, look at what's changed. Would I take this? If I give this offer to this to myself a few years ago, would I take it? Or are you still going to be in the same position that perhaps you're a little bit unhappy about? So now, as much as I can feel, I can put pressure on myself to do more with my business and all the rest of it, I do take time out and think, okay, if I was to offer this to myself going back a few years ago, and particularly the time where I was close to bankruptcy and in complete despair, would I take it? And I'd be like, damn right I would. And guess what? It's not through luck. Like, luck is okay, you can get luck along the way, but the story about you make your own luck, you do. You make your own decisions and you start taking actions. You accept that some people won't like it, but actually, some people will, and that'll align with helping you achieve what you want to achieve. So it's
Brilliant.
there for people.
You are honestly, I love listening to you because you're so passionate, but I mean, it's really about regaining control of your life, isn't it? And I think that's a message, we talk about cranes and industry, but it's a message that goes through anything, to be honest. And you're really inspiring in that way. And some people always say to me, do you not miss operating cranes? I say, I do miss operating cranes. I do, because it was the one thing I was half good at in my whole life. But I don't miss 70-hour weeks. And it's that painful balance that
Yes.
we're just not able as an industry to offer people at the moment. And so your message of saying you've got to take that balance back yourself, decide what you want and work on that. And it isn't easy, but if you really want it, you can get there. And I just think it's awesome. Hands up. Brilliant. Well,
thank you. Thank you. And just to finish off on that, you know, that point there, like there'll be plenty of people who listen to this that when I say about, think about the times when you've said to your partner, nah, we're not able to go to that gig tomorrow night or next week, or nah, I'm not sure if I'm going to make it to the kids' play tomorrow night because I don't know where I'm working and I don't know what time will finish, you know? So the variable nature of the crane world can be very appealing, particularly when it comes to mobile cranes, and that can be exciting, and it can give you this sense of importance because you're reacting in the moment and all the rest of it. But the reality is, you don't have a great deal of control because often you don't know what you're going to be doing the next day until like 5, 6 p.m. sometimes, you know?
It's tough. And did you know what? That's one thing. I mean, I did crawlers, you know, and you did mobiles. And I always thought, I mean, I get bad anxiety anyway, and I can't deal with not knowing where I'm going to be the next day. It freaks me out because I like to plan my journey. I have to know what time I get. And I don't, if I've got like a big journey ahead of me, I don't sleep the night before.
Right.
The thought of doing mobile cranes and doing it on a day-to-day basis just really freaks me out. And I just don't think I could ever do it.
Well, the awareness of that is a good thing, right? Because at least you can work with it then, eh?
I guess so. And I think that comes with age. You become more of aware of what triggers you and how these little things work on you and how anxiety works on you. And
yeah,
it's just, it's one of those things. Kevin, I'm going to swing it back around a little bit now, just a little bit, just mildly. So you went into mobile cranes. You did your AP ticket. You did your supervising ticket. You worked for some of the biggest crane companies in the UK doing these various things. But you're obviously really, really, I want to go into your training now. So I know you've worked for large companies doing training. You've done your own companies doing training, and you've obviously spoke about your bankruptcy. But it must have been a passion that drove you into wanting to train people to be better. It must have been something you saw on site or something that kind of pushed you that way.
Yeah, of course. There were a couple of drivers, Katie. I think one was that I was doing some of the operator inductions and I realized that I had a kind of fairly thorough way of going through things. As much as it can be nice, but there's a lot of problems can come with when you're inducting your mate on a crane, and it's like, yeah, you know what you're doing with that. It's like, how do you know they know what they're doing with that, you know? Yeah. So whereas I discovered, actually, I remember inducting somebody on a DMAG AC80 when I was moving up to a different crane, and they were moving up from like a 40 tonner or something, and he wasn't even that good at reading load charts. Right. And I was like, okay, so I've just assumed that, like, because I'm aware of it and know it, that everybody else is the same. I used to think that way, Katie. I used to think, oh, because I know it, everybody else must know it as well, yes. You know. I think that's a younger person thing as well, right? And then it came to the realization, and I thought, hold on, could it be that I know a little bit better about some stuff than some other people? Well, possibly, but I didn't allow myself that before, and I just thought, well, surely they must know it, you know? So that I started becoming aware that not everybody is working at the same kind of level of knowledge and understanding, and that actually, when I stayed calm rather than get frustrated with people's lack of knowledge, which I was very guilty of at times. People that know me and have worked with me know that, you know, I could be pretty blunt and short of patience back in the day on the cranes. Well, it's something I've worked on. I've really worked on that. I recognized it to be a real flaw. It wasn't going to be helpful going forward and dealing with people, right? So it was one of the things that I really wanted to work on. But rather than being frustrated about people's perhaps lack of knowledge and understanding, I started thinking, well, maybe I can kind of help with that, you know? And also, when the recession kicked in sort of 2000, 8 or so. I was going to be going on a nice brand new 250 tonner for a crane company at the time. And then they decided to sell on because they were concerned about having this financial burden. It was a big thing to them at the time. And so I was a bit disappointed about that, but then it made me kind of evaluate my position. And of course, the amount of overtime was getting hugely dropped. So I was struggling to pay bills. And I thought, there must be something that I can do that kind of stabilizes my income a little bit better. And I've got a little bit more control over it. So it took me some time. And then I thought, right, yeah, I'm going to get into training. And a big driver for that as well was that I genuinely wanted and felt that I could contribute to improving standards, even in a small way in the industry. You know, there's the thing of you can't change the world, but you can certainly improve the immediate sphere around you. You know, that's for sure. And that's what I looked at. If I can just slightly improve people's knowledge on those that I come into contact with, then that's a good thing. So there was an element of contribution and passing over what I got to realize that I understood pretty well. So that was the driver for it towards 2010.
But what made you? So you were obviously working as a trainer for, crane hire companies. What made you start up on your own? Because that, I mean, that's a whole new leap. That's a big step to go, stuff this. That's kind of that stability and moving away from that. You must have really thought, I can nail this. I've got the knowledge. I've got everything I need. I can really, really make an impact here.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So one of the things, Katie, was back in 2013, I'd had leading to that point, I'd had a bit of a hunger and a desire to move overseas, and I'd looked at Australia, and my ex-wife, she didn't fancy Australia because it was just like it's too far away from anything, you know. So I'd kind of felt that there was a compromise on Canada, and I started looking at moving to Canada. And I actually managed to, I went and done the crane operator certification
All right.
in British Columbia. So I got my crane operator ticket, done the exam there and all that stuff for British Columbia. And I got offered a couple of different jobs. So pretty much got everything sorted in place. And this was in 2013. Now, around about the time where that was looking like that was going to happen, and it was on a positive road, the crane company I was working for at the time, and sure they won't mind me saying this, but they actually offered me a directorship, which I'd never seen
Oh,
coming, right? You know,
yeah.
I'd always said, yeah, I'll never get to the top of anybody else's organization because I don't say the things that they want to hear. You know, I was one of those. And I like to think I've never been a yes man, Katie, you know, but try and see things, hopefully, reasonably, objectively. So I actually got offered directorship, and I had to say to them at that point, I really, really appreciate that you've considered me for that. They wanted me to take on, like, the health and safety side of things and drive
Right.
that. And I said, I really appreciate it, but I'm actually looking at move to Canada, so I can't take it, you know, and I don't want to mess you about. So that was, and I stayed with them until then. I was meant to be going to Canada, and that fell through. That didn't happen because of our family situation. We weren't all on board with that, let's say.
Right.
And I decided, okay, I've already committed to leaving the company. So I pretty much decided like that, okay, I'll start up myself.
Wow.
Yeah, I then went freelance, and that was mid 2014, and that was the beginning of having my own little setup. Yeah.
I think, Kevin, what impresses me most about you, I think, is your resilience and how you adapt to change and how you adapt to progress. And it's not, and it, I mean, you talk about it very fluidly and in very simple terms, like, oh yeah, and then that didn't work out, so I did this and then I did that. But some of these things that you've been through would destroy a person, and they wouldn't be able to change their way of thought, and they wouldn't be able to think, okay, well, that hasn't worked out, but what's next? And I think for me, the what your resilience and how you pushed forward yet again after another setback, and you didn't go God, could I still have that job? Or you went, no, fuck yeah. I've handed him my notice. I'm going to do something else now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really, yeah, it's really mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I suppose I'm very much one of these people that's like, okay, I've made my choices, so I'll go with it, you know? Yeah, and yeah, I'll maybe sit and think about my choices for a short period of time, but ultimately I have to like crack on and take the action. And it's interesting you say that as well, Katie. You know, Mark Bringan was fairly tough at times, which did help in ways. It helped build resilience, and I've said this a lot to particularly other ex-military people. People who have been out in war zones and stuff, and you know, the reality is, Katie, there's people who will give comment and opinion on whether it be war situations, political situations, and there is unquestionably no way you can get any possible concept of that unless you've been in those situations. You know, that's just the reality of it. And I find that for people who maybe have done things that are a little bit beyond the ordinary, and I certainly speak about myself here in terms of how I deal with it, and then I can see that in other people. But I've come to realize that lots of the things that I've done in life, I've kind of normalized and gone,
Right.
yeah, that's just what you do. And it's only as I've got older and I've thought, hold on, like actually, some of the things that I've done in life, not everybody would or maybe even can do those, you know.
Yes.
And even in my kind of hobbies as well, the way that I've approached those over time. So actually, for me to not recognize at times that it's you know, it's a fair achievement and just go, well, that's what you do. Actually, I could understand that that was making some other people feel that either A, maybe I was a bit arrogant about it, which
Okay.
certainly I'm not going to deny, you know, that's possible. But also that making maybe other people that are just cracking on with their life, maybe a little feeling of, yeah, well, does that mean I'm kind of a little bit inadequate, you know? Or when people are
Okay.
celebrating, they're going, way, you know, I just like ran on the school Father's Day, Dad's Day race and won
Yeah.
that. And it's like, woohoo! And they're going and getting drinks and all the rest of it. And I'm just like, yeah, let's just do it, you know? So, like I've learned to try not to just normalize things as,
Yeah.
well, you know, done that, you know, just won a medal at World Championships for Taekwondo. Today's another day back on the job, you know. So.
No, and I didn't. I never ever read into it as an arrogance. A resilience and a strength, definitely, but not an arrogance. I would never think of it like that way. Definitely not.
Yeah, but I think kind of think it would be. I'm aware that it could be
Yeah, I
seen. It
get
could be
that.
seen as that. So I've tried to go like if I've tried to get better at what I'm saying is I've tried to get better at celebrating the things that I do well because it's
Yeah.
easy for me to just go, yeah, but that's done, and my expectations were that I'd do that, so I'm moving on to the next thing, you know, rather
No, I
than
get
taking a
that.
moment and going, yes, that's amazing. I'm really glad to give myself a pat on the back there, you know. So that's how I've
I
adapted
think
now.
even that's interesting about you, Kevin. Your awareness of yourself, but your awareness of others, which not many people have. And the way you analyze it as a person, for me, listening in is really interesting as well. Because I don't think it's something that many people do. And maybe it's something that's kind of that you've always, I think it's either something you've always did, or it's something that's come with the training side. And maybe you feel like you have to read people a little bit better in order to educate them a little bit better. I could be way off here, but.
No, I think you're onto something. And you know, you're very good with your questions, by the way, as well, Katie. I'll say that. You know,
Thank you.
you take the you got a nice little bit of a therapist approach as well, you know, where you'll assume something and it gets the person talking more on that. So yeah, fair play to you. It's difficult always to put yourself back in how your mind was some years ago, isn't it? You know,
Yes.
because you evolve and then. Like sometimes it's easy to think that how you think now is very similar to how it was before. So sometimes it, you know, there's a I have realizations of a contrast between how I thought then and how I thought now. But definitely the training. I remember when I first started getting into training, and I realized that as I'd been physically tired when working on the cranes, and sometimes mentally tired if it was a long day of lots and lots of lifts. With the training, when you're constantly thinking and constantly looking at people and whether they're getting it, whether they understand what you're saying, thinking of another way to put something across, man, you know, that it just took me to a new level of like concentration fatigue, you know. But
Yeah.
yeah, I've definitely got to learn how to read people a lot better, understand people a lot better. And also along the way, I've done different things as well, Katie. You know, I became a practitioner of neuro-linguistic programming, NLP,
Okay.
along the way, which kind of really helped to understand how people think. I've done a lot of personal development, so that's helped build my awareness of myself and maybe how other people are, you know, and maybe empathize. I definitely needed to improve my empathy, so I've worked on that a lot, and it really does pay dividends in the training as well. It really does pay dividends because you can kind of gauge a lot better of where people are at, you know,
Yeah.
and whether they're being straight with you, on whether they know it, or whether they're just trying to hold it back because they're a bit embarrassed about saying or whatever. And I try and create these really open
Yeah.
environments so people are okay with like not knowing stuff, and that they can ask, and that when they walk out that room at the end of the course, they're not walking out with anything that they wish they'd asked, you know? So
Do you know
there's a lot of
what?
that that
Yeah,
goes on.
what, Kevin? Two points there. I like the way when you said neuro-linguistic programming that I went, yeah, like I knew what you were talking about. Which I didn't. I really, it's like, just, oh yeah, like I actually know, but I don't. And then what really resonates with me is the fact that you care that the people are coming to you for training all take it on properly. And it's not, I've seen so many trainers who just kind of blanket train to everyone. Some people get it, some people just won't. Some people will get half of it. But from the sounds of it, you want everyone to get it. You want them all to leave understanding what they've come to learn properly.
That's the ideal situation,
Yeah.
Katie. Certainly, that's the ideal. As much as I want to achieve that, also going back some years ago, when I was maybe a couple of years into training, I learned not to take it personally if people didn't get things, you know, because of course you are limited at times by the time you've got available. Maybe there's people that are put on the training that it's not suitable for them. Maybe there's people that, for some reason, they're not actually invested in
Yeah.
learning it. Maybe there's people that have got things going on outside of work that makes it difficult for them to focus. Maybe there's people who are distracted by what's happening on site and they think that answering emails is perhaps more important. But yes, and the feedback I've had, you know, that like how people actually respond to things is, of course, a better indicator of how you're doing than your own perception, right?
Yeah.
And yeah, the feedback that I tend to get is, you know, I've been very fortunate, and it's really nice when you get people. I've had people in their 60s that said, "This is the best training I've ever had," you know, and
Yeah.
that's amazing, that's wonderful. But you can tell when you've got the room or not, you know. And like, so without getting too much into it, I tend not to do too much accredited training now, simply because there's so much focus on what the end outcome has to be, you
Okay.
know, the test. Whereas the last couple of days, I've done lifting management training, and I had different levels of people in there, and I do exercises as I go through, create a workbook so they can do exercises, so they're doing practical application immediately, pretty much. And I'll say, look, like, you just think about your one thing, whatever level you're at. If there's something you can take from this and you become really good at that, and that improves what you do, that thing is your thing, you know? So yeah, you just focus on that. Don't worry about doing everything, you know? Just focus on your one, maybe two things. And that kind of takes the heat off of people as well. And then people are focused maybe on making progress rather than achieving the same benchmark as everybody else that's on the course.
I really like that. Now, Kevin, So we're touching a little bit on your training at the moment. So tell me about what you are doing at the moment. Tell us a little bit about your company and what kind of training you do and a little bit of info.
Yeah, so my company is called Inspire, which of course is a bit of a mouthful when people read it, because if it's
Really? I'm
INSP
like,
and then higher.
inspire.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kevin, that was
I
me.
yeah, I don't mind how people say it as long as they remember it, you know? So that's and if they're like, oh, Inspire higher, you know, and things like that. So yeah, it's just Inspire, but it's
That
like
makes
higher
sense.
as in go higher,
Yeah.
yeah. I started that after a period of time back in employment, you know, after the sort of close to bankruptcy situation and being disillusioned with the industry, and I went back into employment for a while, and that was okay, but because of COVID and other reasons, it didn't really work out. So I was like, okay, so here I'm again. What did I do? And I just took stock and decided to go again, you know. And so I started Inspire, and I'd already had my little pocketbooks out in a previous version, my little waterproof lifting operations pocket assistants, as I call them. I'd had them out, and I thought, right, I'm going to update them, rebrand them, and chuck them out there, and that'll be my little launch for my new company. And they done pretty well. It was like, oh, actually, yeah, maybe I can make a living off Moonsteam again. And so, also with all that I'd learned and the mistakes along the way, because some people avoid mistakes like the plague, but actually, they're where the greatest lessons are. If you look at anybody that's successful in anything, like ask them about what failures have been most helpful to you. Because they'll be there, and often people just focusing on the headline successes, but it's the failures that really make you. And I took all those lessons, a little bit more patience, and then like it just brought me to the table with a whole better energy for that. And now, as I say to people when I'm delivering training, it's those experiences that now give me the privilege to come and deliver this type of training to people like yourselves, you know, people who want the training. So I kind of pick and choose to a good extent on what I do, Katie. If I don't like the feel of it, don't like the sound of it, I tend not to do it. But I'm looking to, well, my tagline is learning for leaders in lifting operations, because it's people who are not just doing what they have to do. As
Right.
people that are looking to do more, to become more, to stand apart, either as an organization or as an individual. Now, just in a nutshell, of course, awarding organizations and accredited training is absolutely essential. I look at it, right? When you've got to get from one side of the river to the other, you need a bridge. The accredited training gives you the structure to that bridge, it gives you the frame. So you could cross, but it leaves gaps, and you could potentially fall through those gaps and you're in the river. And it just is going to be a lot easier and smoother if you put a nice bridge deck on top. So what I do, it puts the bridge deck on top, and it starts filling those gaps that are perhaps left by accredited training.
Yeah.
And also, there's so many people who are APs, they get the AP ticket, the appointed person ticket, and now there's nowhere for them to go to continue learning. So I'm kind of looking at filling the gaps, perhaps that's left by accredited training, but also do stuff that gives people continual support and continual development following those doing those accredited courses.
I think that's brilliant. I think as someone who did their AP ticket, you're kind of just given a ticket, aren't you? And then you go, well, go on then. It's like,
Yeah.
what? What? All that responsibility and the papers and the calculators, and then you go in a company and who don't use any of it. You kind of just scrap it all and you go, okay, but how am I meant to work? How does this work? And I could never really, I'll be honest, I could never really get my head around it very well, you know, and I couldn't. I found it hard to, I found the AP ticket very hard anyway, coming from crane operating background rather than an engineering background. And then trying to put that into practice, I found really hard, and I found the responsibility of it all. I think people go into it and they take it on and they go, okay, but I go, oh my God, what a responsibility. Oh my God, what if something happens? What if I haven't done something correctly? What if I haven't got the knowledge to do something correctly? And then it's like my fault. And that's the way I think of it. And I know a lot of people don't, and some people just don't care, and we know they don't care and they just do it anyway. But yeah, it always gave me a bit of anxiety that did, trying to that risk. I always was really aware of the responsibility of doing something like that.
Well, that comes from being conscientious about what you do as well, right? There's a lot of
Oh, yeah.
scare stories that go around, Katie, though, and often just put people at ease. So, first and foremost, with getting into the kind of the specifics of it, of course, Lawler 1998, Regulation 8, that says every employer shall ensure that every lift and operation is properly planned by a competent person. So, I kind of reassure people, well, firstly, the responsibility is really on the employer. Where it comes to you as the appointed person, you get all this crap that gets spread around, well, you'll go to jail. Like,
Yes.
nobody is going to jail if they are doing their best and they
Yeah.
genuinely are doing their best to keep people safe and do things well. It's not happening. Jail is typically about negligence. So if you know better and you don't do it, then you've
Right.
got a problem, right? But the thing that with at the level of appointed person, of course you're considered to be a manager then, really, aren't you? So the important thing is in BS 7121, it says that employers and crane supervisors must be aware of the limitations of their knowledge and seek further support or further guidance when something is beyond their knowledge, basically, right? So I often say to people, rather than worrying about what's right or wrong, ask yourself, what's the best thing I can do in this
Yeah.
situation? When you ask yourself that, sometimes the answer is, I think I need to ask somebody else a little bit more
Right.
about this, you know? So that's the responsibility on the individual, is it's like, yeah, I don't know, I need to ask. But ultimately, the responsibility of the safety of the lifting operation and who's planning that lifting operation is very much on the employer.
Okay. So yeah, a bit of scaremongering. I take everything very seriously, Kevin. So I'm like, oh my God, I'm off to jail. But yeah, no, I think it. Where can people find out more about Inspire? Where can, if somebody wants to look you up, where can they find you? I think we're putting it out there.
Well, probably the three best places, LinkedIn. I'm always open to connecting with people who are in the industry on LinkedIn. That's where I share some content. I've got a YouTube channel. I'm constantly getting badgered to update that, but that does okay. That's like 4,000 plus followers,
Oh,
so
nice.
and yeah, but I do need to do some new videos on there. I've got some tutorials, which many people say, oh, they're really helpful, and things on sling length and such like. And of course, my website, inspire.co.uk, which I keep having on my list to develop, and I really need to make that a better place to go. Yeah, those are the three places: website, YouTube, and LinkedIn.
Perfect, thank you. Now, Kevin, I could actually talk to you forever, but I realize we've probably been talking a while now,
Oh,
and I'm gonna. No, I could keep
I
going. I actually had
have.
loads more questions to ask,
Yeah.
so maybe we'll have to do a part two at some point.
Okay.
But I've got two questions for you. I usually end on one question, but
Okay.
for you, I've got two questions. First one, what is neuro-linguistic learning?
Neuro-linguistic programming.
There
So
we go. Yeah.
NLP, I'll try and keep it brief. So NLP was set up by a couple of guys who were psychiatrists, Richard Bandler and John Grinder, back in the 70s. And with the view, because they kind of felt that traditional psychotherapy was very long-winded and took a long time to get results. So they looked at something, how can we model more effective strategies, thinking strategies of people who seem to do well in thinking, the successful people in life that get up and make things happen and live life on their terms. So they tried to model that, and it's basically about looking at how you think about yourself, how you see the world, how you interact with that, and the language that you use is typically representative of that as well. When you listen to somebody long
Okay.
enough, how they speak will be a giveaway of how they think, So it's about trying to reframe things and think in a way that's more supportive of you achieving things that you want to achieve. It's about understanding pretty much how you think and trying to change that in the short term to then perhaps build better long-term patterns for yourself.
Okay, I mean, Fascinating. No, probably no more enlightened, but I feel like I understand it a little bit better. But do you know what? It was one of those things when you said it, I'm like, I have no idea what that is. I'm going to have to ask at some point and bring that up. So that's why it's one of my
So
last
let me just
questions.
give you a quick, real
Yeah.
quick example on it. Like
Go
when
on.
people say, when people come in on an AP course, right? There's umpteen people that will say, oh, here we go. I've never been any good at maths, you know? And I'll go, right. So how do you know you're not good at maths? Oh, well, you know, often the answer is, oh, because I was never any good at it at school, you know? And it's like, well, that's a story you're telling yourself. So then
Right.
I'll say, what about if I said to you, somebody that's really good at Pythagoras theorem, what would your view on them be with regards to maths? Well, they'd be pretty good at maths. So then guess what? About an hour later, they're doing Pythagoras theorem. So what story are you telling yourself now? So because if you were saying somebody else was good at maths,
Yeah.
then you can surely say that you're good at maths now. You know, so it's about reframing it and changing the story and opening it up. So actually, rather than these stories preventing you from learning and taking new things on, you expand it and you open yourself to the possibility of taking things on that are helpful to you, you know?
I'm gonna sign you up as my life coach after this, Kevin. I don't know what you charge per hour, but we need to get it working. My last question, my very last question, I ask everyone this at the end of the podcast. What's one thing we can all do to make the construction industry a little bit better for everyone?
Oh, that's a good one. I think, goodness me, let me just take a moment to narrow this down. I think perhaps being a little bit more aware and honest with ourselves, what we really want to achieve from it. And I think that if people were just a little bit more open, and even if that means that, well, I'm just here to earn as much money as I can, then you can kind of deal with that, you know. But I think part of the problem sometimes is the politics that go on and people concealing things and all the rest of it, and just kind of be a little bit open and try to seek to understand each other a little bit better. Rather than concealing things and cracking on, and all of a sudden things don't get done. You know, there's so much going over time and over budget, and like then there's pressure on everybody because we're pretending and going, yeah, we'll sort that, and actually you can't sort that. So a little
Yeah.
bit more openness, being honest with yourself, and not being afraid to say, no, on this occasion I'm not going to be able to do that because actually I've got something bigger and more important to achieve right now, you know. So that would help.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Kevin. You've been a fantastic guest. I'll let you enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, you've been a fantastic host, Katie. Thank you for the line of questions. Yeah, it doesn't take much to get me talking, but you've done that extraordinarily well, so thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.